Hello and welcome to Prehistory, the Archaeology of the Ancient Near East, with me, Jane Gastra. Last episode, we had a look at the 6th millennium in the southern and central Levant, with the many, many arguments about the Wadi Rabba culture. One of the big debates about the Wadi Rabba was whether or not it should be considered something at the end of the late Neolithic or something at the beginning of the early Chalcolithic, the Copper Stone Age. In this episode, we're going to have a look at Anatolia, where instead of a big argument, we have general agreement that we are in the early Chalcolithic. As you shall see, this wonderful consensus about when and where we are in the past really does not help, as the wonderful range of local cultures that we saw in Anatolia during the 7th millennium are still around. And here in the early Chalcolithic, none of them are, strictly speaking, actually Chalcolithic. The difficulty that we have in talking about the early Chalcolithic in Anatolia, which runs from about 6000 to 5500 Cal BCE, is that these five centuries are considered the start of the Chalcolithic for different reasons than we normally use for the start of the Chalcolithic in the rest of the Near East. Generally, when we start talking about the start of the Chalcolithic, as we'll see in a few episodes when we get into the Chalcolithic in other parts of the Near East, we are talking about at least one of two things. The first of these is evidence for the beginning of people experimenting with smelting and working metal, especially copper. The second is evidence for what we call craft specialization, which is something that we'll get into in detail when we talk about the Chalcolithic in other parts of the ancient Near East, as well as later stages of the Chalcolithic here in Anatolia. Out of these two things that we commonly tend to see across the Near East as associated with the Chalcolithic, metalworking or specialization, neither turns up here in early Chalcolithic Anatolia. Several decades ago, as in 70 or 80 years or more ago, there was another way that people broke up the past in the ancient Near East. In the Iron Age, we had people starting to use iron. In the Bronze Age, we had people starting to use bronze. And in the Neolithic, we had villages and we had people starting to make pottery. In between the Neolithic and the Bronze Age, we had people starting to make fancy painted pottery. And this time period with fancy painted pottery but without bronze was called the Chalcolithic. In other words, we finished the Neolithic when people started to make painted pottery. As you may have guessed, considering all of the Neolithic painted pottery that I've talked about over the last few episodes, this way of dividing up the past has gone out of fashion as we've learned more about prehistoric societies. In Anatolia, though, this association of painted pottery with the beginning of the Chalcolithic was made about 70 years ago when it was still being used in other areas like Mesopotamia. The difference here is that this way of breaking up the past stuck. So in Anatolia, sites and cultures are considered to be Chalcolithic when they start making painted pottery. For most of Anatolia, this comes at about 6000 Cal BCE, so that's when the Chalcolithic is considered to start. This is a problem for several reasons, not the least of which being that the painted pottery that we see here in the early Chalcolithic doesn't necessarily continue to be part of cultures in the later stages of the Chalcolithic. Also, like I said, we don't have metalworking or other things that we consider to be really characteristic of the Chalcolithic in the rest of the Near East. What we have instead is two areas of agreement for people working in the 6th millennium in Anatolia. Pretty much everyone agrees that this time period is the Chalcolithic. And pretty much everyone also agrees that considering this time period to be Chalcolithic is something that we do more as a matter of habit and tradition, rather than because the ancient societies that we find actually look objectively Chalcolithic. Or to put it another way, early Chalcolithic Anatolia is still a time of Neolithic villages. We just don't call it that. When we last looked at Anatolia in the 7th millennium, we saw that this big region of the ancient Near East was made up of a range of small regional traditions, with different regions of Anatolia having different types of villages with different shapes and styles of houses, different types of pottery, and so on. When we've been looking at the 6th millennium in other parts of the Near East, such as the Halaf culture of Upper and Central Mesopotamia, which is actually just next door in the very southeastern corner of what is now Turkey, we see instead cultures that spread across multiple modern countries. These have little regional traditions within them, such as the most popular designs to paint on the pottery, but overall, it's the same culture spread over a big area. in the 6th millennium, Anatolia looks a lot more like it did in the 7th millennium than like its closest neighbors to the southeast. Part of this might be because Anatolia is a very different type of landscape to northern Mesopotamia. Most of northern Mesopotamia is pretty flat, with shallow valleys spread along rivers that run together into the Tigris and Euphrates and connect big areas of the landscape together. Anatolia is full of mountains, valleys, and plateau, so individual river valleys are smaller and maybe not so well connected to other regions. Part of this is also probably because the change from the late Neolithic to the early Chalcolithic across Anatolia really doesn't have any big cultural changes. What we see instead are small and more gradual shifts in the late Neolithic cultures that we had at the end of the 7th millennium. When we talked about Anatolia in the 7th millennium, the easiest way to compare all the smaller regional cultures was to have a look around at each of the different regions of Anatolia in turn. Now that we're coming back to have a look at these different regions in the early Chalcolithic, we see that differences between local cultures tend to divide between the same regions as they did before. When we looked at central Anatolia in the late Neolithic, we saw some changes to the most well-known site of Çatalhöyük. When we talked about Çatalhöyük in the late Neolithic, it was a large village of clustered neighborhoods grouped together and making up pretty much the only site in the Konya Plain in central Anatolia. Well, people continued to live at Çatalhöyük after 6000 Cal BCE, but after about this point, it stops being the only settlement on the plain, with about 15 little villages starting to appear around the plain in addition to Çatalhöyük. We could be talking about more people moving into the area, or people from Çatalhöyük moving out over time to live in smaller villages closer to their fields and away from the big village. Which of these it was is hard to say, but the overall size of Çatalhöyük does shrink a bit after 6000 Cal BCE, so it could be that some of the people living in the densely packed neighborhoods of the late Neolithic moved out of the village and into smaller and quieter villages of their own across the plain. This doesn't mean that Çatalhöyük also turned into a tiny farming village like the ones that we see on the plain, though. It's still about 8 hectares of housing area. So while it's smaller than it used to be, we're still talking about something like 10 times the size of the new villages that are popping up on the plain. When we talked about Çatalhöyük last time, I mentioned that it's a tell site, meaning that it's a big mound of settlements that built on top of one another as people continued to live in the same spot for a while. Something that I didn't mention is that it's a tell site made up of multiple settlement mounds. This actually isn't all that unusual at tell sites. When people were living on the side of a hill for a few thousand years, or even a few hundred years, they didn't always stick to just the top of one hill. And often you get houses on several mounds near one another, sometimes just on the tops of the hills, and sometimes also on the ground in between them. At Çatalhöyük, people put villages on the top of one of the mounds, the East Mound, when the site was founded. For most of the late Neolithic at Çatalhöyük, people continued to live in the large village of the East Mound. From about 6000 Cal BCE, though, some of the people living on the East Mound didn't just move out onto the plain and found little villages. Some of them also moved a much shorter distance and started to build houses on the other mound, the West Mound. People lived on both the older East Mound and the newer West Mound for about 150 years, before the village on the East Mound was abandoned, and people only lived at the newer village on the West Mound, at least until about 5500 Cal BCE, at the end of the early Chalcolithic, when Çatalhöyük was abandoned completely. When people started moving out of Çatalhöyük, as well as when people start moving onto the West Mound at Çatalhöyük itself, we see what looks like a breakup of the old pattern of building villages as clustered neighborhoods. What we get instead is villages made up of individual buildings or small clusters of buildings with open spaces next to them. And instead of people climbing up and traveling across the rooftops, we see streets and alleys between the houses for people to move through, with even what looks very much like doors turning up at ground level, instead of entrances on the roof or on an upper floor. This breakup of the old clustered neighborhoods suggests that these villages, such as Çatalhöyük, were no longer working from the neighborhood as a basic social unit, but may have been moving to the individual family or the extended family, forming the core social unit for people in the village, a lot like what we've already seen in other parts of the Near East. We see similar changes at the nearby site of Khan Hasan, which is not on the Konya Plain, but which is also in central Anatolia. Although here we still have a village set up in something which is a lot closer to the cluster neighborhood style than what we see at the time at Çatalhöyük. At Çatalhöyük, the rooms of the houses that we have preserved, the ground floor, are small and pretty featureless, with very little in the way of painted and decorated plaster or even wall plastering like we saw in the late Neolithic. This could mean either that people were a lot less interested in decorating the insides of their houses than they were before, or it could mean that these ground floor rooms were actually the basements of these houses, being mostly used for storage with an upper floor where people actually lived and slept. The idea that these may have been basements is reinforced by the size of the walls, which are pretty thick. At Khan Hasan, we have something similar, with walls for the ground floor of the houses also being massive, and with internal buttresses to support wooden beams holding up the upper story and a floor between the stories. In some houses, we find post holes in the floor placed in between these internal buttresses, suggesting that posts may have been placed under the beams separating the ground and upper floors to help support the weight. In both villages, the walls of the houses are made out of mud brick, and at Khan Hasan, these have been laid in what's called the header and stretcher fashion, meaning that one layer of bricks is laid parallel to the course of the wall, and the next layer of bricks is put in crosswise, and then parallel again, and so on. This way of laying bricks is much better at holding up a lot of weight, and combined with the thick walls and internal buttresses, this suggests that houses at Khan Hasan tended to be more than one story. Just like at Çatalhöyük, we don't get much in the way of painting or decoration on the walls of the rooms at the ground floor in these houses. Some buildings don't seem to have any plaster on the walls, and others just have basic mud plaster. The difference between early Chalcolithic Çatalhöyük and early Chalcolithic Khan Hasan, though, is that at Khan Hasan, we have pretty good preservation of the walls of the houses from this period. And we even have some remains of walls not only to the top of the ground floor, but even also all the way up into some areas of the upper floor. Where we have these preserved areas of walls from the upper floor, we can see that these usually were not only plastered, but also painted. This suggests that the lovely decorated and painted plaster on the rooms that we saw at late Neolithic Çatalhöyük hasn't gone away. People were just mostly using the upper floors of their houses as living area, and that was where they took the time to paint and decorate the walls. On the ground floor, which is mostly what we find, they just weren't all that bothered about putting time into painting and decorating the basement storerooms. While we do have some noticeable changes in architecture, in other areas, such as chipstone tools, we don't have much in the way of change from the late Neolithic to the early Chalcolithic. We still have a chipped stone manufacturing method with a lot of blades, unlike changes in other areas, such as the Levant, where we've been seeing more and more movement over to using flakes and making tools from flakes. Here in central Anatolia, we still not only find mostly blades, but still have evidence for careful additional techniques used in the shaping of blades, such as indirect percussion or pressure flaking. We talked about pressure flaking before at the end of the pre-pottery Neolithic in several parts of the Near East. This is where you don't hit the stone with your stone hammer, but very carefully instead press on a specific point, adding more and more pressure without moving your hands around until the pressure being placed on the stone causes a little chip to ping off. Indirect percussion is similar in that it's a delicate process for taking off small and precise bits of stone so that you have a lot of control over the shape of the finished tool. Indirect percussion is a pretty broad term, since it basically means using something in between the hammer stone and the stone being chipped. A good example of this would be using a bit of antler almost as a chisel. If you take a thin tine of antler, a tine being one of the points that you see on the antlers of a deer, a bit like the individual branches of a tree, and you take the pointed end of this tine and place it on the stone where you want to remove a tiny piece, then hit the other end of the antler with your hammer stone. Antler is very springy, so it acts like a soft mallet rather than a hard hammer. And you can control the impact because you're only touching the stone being chipped with the very tip of the point of the antler tine. It's a bit like carving a stone tool using hammer and chisel, except that in this case, the hammer is a rock and the chisel is a little piece of antler. This isn't necessarily something that's appearing first in the early Chalcolithic, as we have a lot of these delicate techniques for shaping stone tools also in the late Neolithic. But this approach to making carefully retouched blade tools is still being practiced in central Anatolia, also in the early Chalcolithic. Where we do have change, of course, is in the pottery. The early Chalcolithic is the early Chalcolithic because we start to see painted pottery. So it's not surprising that in central Anatolia, we start to see pottery decorated with painting. These are mostly painted in a reddish-brown paint on a cream or a buff-colored slip. The designs are mostly geometric shapes, like wavy lines or chevrons. The pottery itself is made with tempering, rather than the fine-filtered or levigated clay that we see at this same time in the southeast in Halaf, northern Mesopotamia. The temper for this pottery varies a bit, though, sometimes using something mineral, like really fine gravel, or sometimes using chaff, or chopped up straw from wheat or barley. The pottery itself is, as usual, a mix of jars and bowls. Some of these jars have necks which flare out wide at the top, and some of them have little handles on the shoulder of the jar. Sometimes these little handles were little handles, and sometimes they were shaped into something a bit more fun, such as little animal heads. Bowls have some new shapes as well, and ones that we've seen before. We get a lot of carinated bowls, the ones with a sharp change in the angle partway up, that are also popular in northern Mesopotamia and the Levant at this same time. We also get some new types of pottery, such as something that we call pot stands. These are L-shaped chunks of clay, often with geometric decoration carved into them. Individually, these would have been a bit useless, but if you had three or more of them, you place them together underneath a pot a little bit like legs. Since feet or fancy base rings on pots tended to be very rare, and most of the jars and bowls just had flat bases. I'll put a photo on the website of these pot stands so you can see what they look like when they were actually being used. Central Anatolia in the early Chalcolithic wasn't all entirely the same. In Cappadocia, which is only about 130 kilometers or about 80 miles away from Çatalhöyük and Khan Hasan, we have a different sort of early Chalcolithic at sites like Kozkoyuk or Tepecik. Here we also have small farming villages, but ones which are built with stone foundations and rammed mud or pisé walls. These villages were laid out with individual houses which were set close together, with passage through the village made possible through a series of small and twisting alleys. Entrance into these houses was made from the alleys through doors at ground level. We get two types of buildings. Some are rectangular buildings with a single large room and a range of household features, such as hearths, ovens, and storage bins. At some sites, such as Tepecik, these houses were always only one room, while at others, like Kozkoyuk, they are divided up into two or four internal rooms. Some of these houses had floors paved in stone, both for the single room and for the multi-room type of houses. The other type of structure that we see is almost certainly not a house, or at least not the main living area of one. The second type of buildings that we see have a lot of rooms, but each room is tiny, less than 1 meter or 1 yard across in either direction. These buildings of mini rooms are believed to have been storage buildings, either separate from the large one-room houses or functioning as the ground floor for houses with a large open living area on an upper floor. In the large one-room houses, and if the storage areas were basements to houses on an upper floor, presumably here as well, we get the insides of houses decorated with plastered walls, and for those without stone floors, also with plastered floors. The floors could then be painted in either orange or white, and it looks like the walls may also have been painted as well, but the preservation at sites isn't good enough to tell if this was common, or if only the occasional house was painted with designs and murals on the walls. Unlike the mix of flint and obsidian that we find at Çatalhöyük and Khan Hasan, early Chalcolithic villages in Cappadocia use almost exclusively obsidian for their stone tools. As Cappadocia is one of the obsidian sources that we see sending obsidian down into the Levant and northern Mesopotamia, they presumably had plenty of access to obsidian right in the area, and, well, it's the good stuff, so why wouldn't you use it as much as you could? Like in the rest of central Anatolia, the stone tools were mostly made from blades, although some tools, such as scrapers, were made from flakes. The nearby obsidian also means that we find other things being made from obsidian, not just here, but also at Çatalhöyük. At both Kozkoyuk and Çatalhöyük, excavators found obsidian mirrors. These are not common, as they would have been not only really hard to make, but also very fragile. And at any site farther from obsidian sources, they were probably also likely to get converted into stone tools if they got damaged. These obsidian mirrors are what they sound like. A chunk of obsidian that was polished flat and, well, mirror smooth on one side so that people could check their reflection in the dark volcanic glass. While we see painted pottery turning up at Çatalhöyük and Khan Hasan, in Cappadocia this was far less common. Mostly we see pottery being made with just a red slip. We get necked jars and carinated bowls, not all that different in overall shape to what we saw at Çatalhöyük, but without the widely flaring necks of the jars, and without the added pot stands. Instead, we get a type of pottery similar to a large wine goblet, or a small bowl on a raised stem base, which here are known as fruit stands. While we don't get the red painting on cream surfaces like we saw in other parts of central Anatolia, we do get some other types of interesting decoration on pottery here in Cappadocia. Some of the carinated jars with high necks have elaborate scenes of people and animals done in high relief, meaning that either the jar was originally made thicker at the top and then carved to create these scenes, or clay was added to the top part of the jar after it was formed, and then this clay was carved out to make little figures of people and animals. In some cases, we have scenes of what looks like people hunting animals, and in other cases, we have what looks like people and animals dancing together around the top of the jar. Or we just have relief carving of the heads of the animals molded onto the sides of the jars. This added relief decoration was sometimes also painted. When we have images of people, we can see something of their outfits, which is rare to see this far back in the past. The women are either wearing a very tall hat or a headdress, or have their hair piled up on top of their heads in a tall style. The men are also wearing something that looks like hats, although smaller than the women, and are shown wearing a kind of skirt with a flap at the back. When the men are shown running, either hunting the animals or dancing with them, this back flap is shown flying out horizontally behind them, perhaps to indicate fast movement. If we look at burials in the early Chalcolithic of central Anatolia, the burials that we saw under the floors of houses at late Neolithic Çatalhöyük cease after about 6000 Cal BCE, with people presumably mostly being buried somewhere outside of the villages. In Cappadocia, we do find some burials, either beneath the floors of houses like at Kozkoyuk or in open spaces around the houses. At Kozkoyuk, all of these burials under the floors of houses are of children. Some buried directly in the ground, and others buried inside a large jar-like container. In both kinds of burials, we tend to find grave goods, including the high-relief decorated jars, arm rings, necklaces, obsidian points, or groundstone axes. Just to the southwest of central Anatolia, we have the Lakes District, which also has a different early Chalcolithic to central Anatolia, much as it had a different regional culture in the late Neolithic to that of central Anatolia. In the Lakes District, the decoration style on the pottery changes during the early Chalcolithic, meaning that the early Chalcolithic here can be divided into two phases. After the monochrome, or single color, unpainted pottery of the late Neolithic, we see what is rather wonderfully called the fantastic style from about 6000 to 5800 Cal BCE, which changes into the less excitingly named geometric style of decoration from 5800 to 55 or 5600 Cal BCE, when the early Chalcolithic ends. In terms of the way that villages were set out around the landscape, we don't get a lot of change from the late Neolithic. We're still looking at a series of small farming villages dotted around the landscape. In terms of how these villages were laid out, we do see some changes from the late Neolithic. In the late Neolithic, such as at the extensively excavated site of Hachilar, we had houses laid out in rows on either side of a street with the walls made from either mud bricks or pisé. At the beginning of the early Chalcolithic, in the fantastic style phase, this changes to a village with the houses built in groups around central courtyards. The houses are grouped together so that their outside walls all connect together to form a perimeter wall for the house group. The individual houses in the group each have a smaller front room and a larger back room. This back room sometimes contains an oven and a hearth, but these aren't that common. More often, these back rooms have built-in storage features, like storage bins or small grain silos. These house groups changed again in the geometric phase, where excavators found two large complexes of small rooms, each of which had very thick walls, averaging about 2 meters or 6 feet thick. The rooms inside of each complex were mostly square and about 6 by 6 meters, so pretty big. There were usually several internal buttresses throughout each building complex, and neither complex seems to have a door, at least not at ground level. Some of the rooms have a hearth, but mostly they lack any sort of normal domestic features which would suggest that people were living in them. This, combined with the internal buttresses, really thick walls, and a lack of a door, suggests that these big complexes were actually also the basement storage areas for houses, or for groups of connected houses since they're huge, which would have had living space on an upper story. The presence of an upper story for both house complexes is strongly suggested by the remains of a collapsed upper story that was found in one of them, which contained pottery and other household goods, charred wood, and even the skeletons of a couple of children, who seem to have been casualties of the house collapse. When we look at the names for the stages of the late Neolithic and early Chalcolithic, the monochrome, fantastic, and geometric, to be honest, what stands out for me is that the fantastic style is an excellent name for a pottery phase. Apart from that, though, the monochrome late Neolithic is actually not entirely accurate as a name. Some painted pottery does turn up during the monochrome phase, which is slightly awkward as it's the late Neolithic in Anatolia, where the early Chalcolithic is defined by the appearance of painted pottery. On the rare cases at the end of the monochrome phase, where we have this technically Neolithic painting, it's simple stripes, or maybe at its most fancy, a bit of crosshatching. When we get to the early Chalcolithic and the fantastic style, painted pottery is suddenly a lot more common. Like, half of the pottery being painted. That's sort of more common. Pottery is mostly in jars and bowls, including carinated bowls and jars with open necks, like we saw in central Anatolia. We see little handles on pots which are made in the shape of animal heads, also like we saw in central Anatolia. Some of the vessels also have little feet, although rounded bases are still a lot more common. Painted vessels are usually a red-brown paint on a cream-slipped vessel, similar to what we saw in central Anatolia. The decoration style, though, is certainly different. Usually, the bottom part of the jar or the bowl would be painted entirely in red, and the upper portions would be decorated with elaborate, abstract, wavy designs, not figures and not geometric shapes, but something altogether more freestyle. This gradually changes into more repeating designs, and then gradually more repeating geometric designs over time and transitions into what would be called the geometric style after about 5800 Cal BCE. When we look at Western Anatolia, in both the Aegean and the Marmara regions, we're looking at parts of Anatolia which only developed stable farming villages in the early to mid 7th millennium. Unlike central Anatolia and the lakes, which had farming villages all throughout the 7th millennium or even before. Just like each of these regions of western Anatolia was distinct in the 7th millennium as people started settling into farming villages and started making their own local pottery, these two regions continued to be different during the early Chalcolithic. One of the most extensively excavated early Chalcolithic sites in Aegean Anatolia, or in southwestern Anatolia, is Uluçak, where the houses of the village in this period were organized into rows, with the houses often touching, but with each having its own separate walls, like the villages of the 7th millennium. Other sites from this region had houses built together in groups around a communal courtyard, similar to what we saw at Hatçalar in the fantastic style phase. At both types of villages, the houses were probably for individual families, with related families living in rows or living in groups. Houses were built mostly with stone foundations, although how the upper portions were built varies between houses even in the same village. Some houses were built with mud brick, some with rammed earth pisé technique, and some were built from what we call wattle and daub, meaning a fence of wooden stakes woven together with branches or with thinner strips in wood was put into the foundations, the wattle, and then plastered over with thick coatings of mud, the daub. The houses usually had ovens and hearths, either just inside the main room or outside on a little porch area. Inside the houses, the walls and the floors were usually plastered over and then sometimes also painted. Stone tools in Aegean Anatolia, like those from central Anatolia and the lakes, were made mostly from blades. Here we get a lot of large, irregular blades, where people seem to have not been all that interested in making them in a standard shape. We also get pretty much nothing in the way of arrowheads, which seem to have been replaced by slings and slingstones made from baked clay, similar to the ones that we see in northern Mesopotamia and also in the southern Levant. The pottery in Aegean Anatolia is a little more complicated, especially since it's the early Chalcolithic. The shapes of vessels are pretty simple, with jars being whole-mouthed, necked, or with slightly flaring necks called S-shaped, because they have an S shape in cross-section. Carinated bowls, so popular in the East, are not part of the fashion here. Vessels were decorated, often with impressed patterns made from fingernails or shells, with some rare relief decoration as well. Painted vessels do occur, but they are really rare, which slightly complicates things, since this is the early Chalcolithic, and the Chalcolithic is supposed to start when we're getting painted pottery. While the painted pottery of Aegean Anatolia might be rare, it is at least present, which is more than we can say for the Marmara region of northwest Anatolia. Pottery in the Marmara region during the early Chalcolithic has similar base components to what we see in other parts of Anatolia during this period, with the temper used inside the clay of vessels being made from either minerals like crushed rocks, fine gravel, or crushed calcite, or being made from chaff. Where the pottery is different is that, unlike with Aegean Anatolia, we do see carinated bowls coming into fashion. Unlike Aegean Anatolia, where painted pottery is very rare, here it does not seem to be around at all. It might be just that it's even more rare than the very rare painted pottery of Aegean Anatolia, and it hasn't turned up yet. But, generally speaking, the early Chalcolithic of the Marmara region is an even more arbitrary name for the phase than it is in other regions, since the pottery is decorated in the same way as before, with incised decoration. Although impressed decoration, such as pressing seashells into the surface of the pot, does disappear in the early Chalcolithic. While we may not see much in the way of new or flashy changes to the pottery in the Marmara region during the early Chalcolithic, village layouts and the construction of houses do show some changes. At the site of İlipinar, we have a huge mass of post holes. These are the darker round pits that you get at sites when a wooden post was placed into the ground, but which has since rotted away. This isn't usually a huge feature of houses in other parts of the Near East, which are built of mud brick or pisé, with or without stone foundations. This is something that you tend to see instead when houses are built out of wattle and daub, or from a more robust version where rows of wooden posts are placed together and then plastered over with mud. This is pretty much how houses seem to have been built at İlipinar, with 6x6 meter rectangular houses built from wooden stakes being placed into the ground around the perimeter of the house, and then slabs of mud were built up around the posts and then higher up above them to form the walls. Sometimes these houses seem to have been built from slabs of mud without wooden stakes, similar to a Pisa style, and sometimes the walls were made instead with wattle and daub. Floors seem to have been raised up on crossbeams, with planks or smaller beams of wood laid across to form the floor, which were then covered in plaster, although some houses also just had dirt floors. The massive post holes that we find at Ilipinar suggest that these houses would have been rebuilt pretty often, perhaps as much as once for every one or two generations. After about 5700 Cal BCE, we see changes in the layout of the village, which lasts for the next couple of hundred years until the end of the early Chalcolithic. After 5700 Cal BCE, houses were made out of mud brick, using the weight-supporting header and stretcher technique like we saw at Khan Hasan in central Anatolia. These mud brick houses were arranged in a circle around the edge of the village, with a 1 meter or 1 yard high circular embankment running behind them, marking the edge of the village. This would have functioned a bit as a wall, but it would not have had any real defensive purpose, as any adults could have just climbed over or even jumped over it. It may have been either for trying to keep the livestock in, or to keep wild animals out, or possibly even for drainage. The houses along the outside of the village were arranged with narrow alleys between some of them, and with their doors all facing into the center of the village. Some of these houses seem to have had a little porch or a veranda out front, and all of the excavated ones look to have had raised wooden floors covered with mud plaster, like the houses of the earlier phase. Several of the houses also had the collapsed remains of an upper story, suggesting that these houses might have all had at least one upper floor. There do seem to have been some buildings in the center of the village, although it's less clear if these were more houses or if they were storage buildings. Ilipinar also has its own natural spring, which is believed to have come up into the center of the village during the 6th millennium, which would have given everyone in the village easy access to a good water source. The stone tools made by people in early Chalcolithic villages of the Marmara region were essentially the same ones that were made here in the late Neolithic, with the production of tools made from blades, made from bullet cores, and then finished with pressure flaking. In the later 7th millennium, a small amount of obsidian from Cappadocia was found at sites like Ilipinar. But after about 6000 Cal BCE, this amount of imported obsidian drops off sharply to almost nothing. The early Chalcolithic of Anatolia, as we've seen, varies either a little or a lot from one part of Anatolia to another. Across all of these regions, we have the slightly awkward discussion of a Chalcolithic in the absence of metal production, which is something that we don't see in Anatolia until the middle of the Middle Chalcolithic, after about 5000 Cal BCE. Anatolia is in some ways easier than the southern Levant in the 6th millennium, and in some ways it's harder. Yes, everyone pretty much agrees that this first half of the 6th millennium should be called the early Chalcolithic. And everyone also pretty much agrees that we're basing this on the introduction of painted pottery, which isn't really a sign of the Chalcolithic anymore, and that we're mostly just using the name for this period out of habit. What makes it harder in some ways is that this doesn't really work for Anatolia. It is a habit, but it's also a lie. Even when we use the Anatolian designation of early Chalcolithic as meaning has painted pottery, it's kind of a lie. This is because there isn't much evidence for a painted pottery tradition in the Marmara region, or even really in the Aegean region, meaning that for most of Western Anatolia, or Western Asia Minor, the change to the early Chalcolithic after about 6000 Cal BCE is in some ways even more arbitrary than it is in the rest of Anatolia. So in these western parts, the early Chalcolithic, being classified as 6000 to 5500 Cal BCE, is even more artificial than it is for the rest of Anatolia. Breaking up time in this way, and using the same names and mostly the same dates for all of Anatolia, does have the advantage of meaning that we can talk about all of Anatolia using the same names and ranges of time. But we have to constantly remember that we're not talking about the same thing in all parts of Anatolia. If we consider Chalcolithic to mean the time when people started to experiment around with smelting out and using copper, or even when we start to see craft specialization, then none of Anatolia is actually Chalcolithic in the early Chalcolithic. If we take the older way of breaking down time and consider the early Chalcolithic to mean the time when people start to use fancy painted pottery, then only central Anatolia and nearby regions like the lakes are really Chalcolithic, while western Anatolia, in the Aegean and Marmora regions, are mostly or entirely late Neolithic, even though we call them Chalcolithic. Then again, in the very southeastern corner of Turkey, in what we consider to be northern Mesopotamia, we also have to remember that we have the Halaf culture present at this time, which is definitely using fancy painted pottery, but which is still considered also to be very much late Neolithic. So we have the Chalcolithic in Anatolia starting from about 6,000 Cal BCE and running to about 5,500 Cal BCE. But we don't have a lot of major changes to societies in any of the regions of Anatolia, and we kind of also don't have a Chalcolithic. What we have instead is some gradual changes to late Neolithic societies across Anatolia that slightly reorganize in the way that the villages are laid out, and that suggest the importance of the households in areas where these were already not the important unit of society in the late Neolithic. The most noticeable feature is that in many parts of Anatolia, but not all, we start to see painted pottery, sometimes really elaborately painted pottery, if maybe not as excessively elaborate as Halaf pottery, but still fancy, turning up at sites across many regions from about 6,000 Cal BCE, with different fashions and changes to fashions for what was painted on them and for other decorative aspects of the pottery over the first half of the 6th millennium, such as relief-molded scenes or little handles in the shape of animal heads. If you compare these changes to what we see during the 6th millennium in northern Mesopotamia or the southern Levant, then what you have in all of these regions is a rise for the fashion of painted pottery, sometimes elaborately painted or even fantastic. How this happens and what was the most fashionable style changes from region to region, and sometimes even from valley to valley. But we can still think of it as something common to the late Neolithic world of the ancient Near East, even if sometimes that late Neolithic world is called the early Chalcolithic. You may have noticed something a bit odd about the parts of Anatolia that we've talked about in this episode. We've gone through all the parts of Asia Minor, central Anatolia, the Lake District, and the two areas of western Anatolia, one to the north and one to the south. But we haven't gone east. Now, to the southeast, we have northern Mesopotamia, and we talked about the 6th millennium there in episode 22. But we haven't talked about the northeast, the land to the north of northern Mesopotamia, which is commonly called eastern Anatolia. Eastern Anatolia runs between northern Mesopotamia and the Black Sea and into the Caucasus Mountains. We haven't had a good look at either eastern Anatolia or the Caucasus Mountains since the early days of the Neolithic. And next time, we will catch up and see what's been happening here over the last couple of thousand years as we work our way around the edges of the ever-popular Halaf culture with a look at its neighbors directly to the north. Thank you for listening to the Prehistory Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach me at prehistorypodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to see any examples of the wide range of designs for villages, houses, and pottery, fantastic or otherwise, that we find across early Chalcolithic Anatolia, then you can find these on the website at prehistorypodcast.com, along with a list of related books and articles for each episode. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give the podcast a rating and a review on your platform of choice to help others find it. And come back and join us next time when we will have a look at the Neolithic of Eastern Anatolia and the Caucasus.